Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, friends? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here. Before we get started and go over the best and worst performances of preseason week two, just a quick shout out to Autograph. I'm partnering with Autograph this month, and they are providing one of the coolest sports apps that I've had the opportunity to work with, see, utilize, etc. It is so fun. It has all of your Packers needs or any of your other favorite team's needs all in one spot. Your favorite podcasts for the team, your favorite news articles for the team. There's a ton of really cool content and exclusive content about the team that you can find there as well, including from yours truly. I just did another exclusive piece over on Autograph. You can find it right now. It's pinned to the top. I did my three biggest takeaways from Packers Broncos, so make sure to check that out as well. If you need more Andy in your life, that's probably not something you need, but go check it out anyway. It is a great feature. I love the app, and I think you're going to love it too, so make sure to check that out. I will have the link and the referral code in the notes below, so make sure, again, to check that out. And kudos to Autograph, and thank you to Autograph for partnering here at Pack-A-Day this month. And of course, you can get the Pack-A-Day podcast right on the Autograph app as well. What more could you possibly want in life? All right, let's get to the best and worst performances of week two. It was an abysmal showing for the Packers against the Broncos. This is why I love doing what I do. And the truth is, yeah, that's not a super fun tape to go through, right? It's going to be frustrating. It's going to be, you know, I don't want to say boring, but it definitely at times gets to be like, all right, we just need to finish this up and get it done with. But the reason I love doing it is for a multitude of reasons, but there's always some silver linings. There's always some positives to take away. And some of the players that you think in real time maybe didn't perform the best actually didn't have that bad of a game. And we're going to talk about some of those today. And there are some players that you think in real time, oh, I kind of liked what they were doing. And then you go and watch the film and you're like, ugh, not so sure about that. So we'll go through all of that today. I think we're going to see both sides of it. But I promise you, there were some positive takeaways from that game, and we will go over it. So as you guys know, I grade every player on every play. I will say this probably until I'm blue in the face, until I am no longer on this planet, or until I no longer do this anymore. These are not perfect. They are not the be-all, end-all. I am not a perfect grader. I started this off to do it for basically my own purposes and just kind of keep track of who's doing well. And the bigger thing was to watch every player on every play so I could speak educatedly about what is going on with the team, who's playing well, who's not playing well, and so I could keep track of trends. Just so happened that people liked the grades. I started putting them out more, and it's become a more sought after thing. But again, they are not perfect. I don't know the play in certain situations. I don't know what everyone's trying to accomplish. I am grading what they did on the play and specifically what is gradable on that play. Not everything is. The Packers coaches might grade that play different because they know exactly what play is being called, where the person is exactly supposed to be. Did they hit the landmarks? Did they execute the play? Did they do their job on that play? I'm looking at it from a totally different view. I'm looking at, now sometimes it is very clear and obvious what play is, you know, is being called and what you're trying to do on that play. And for example, sometimes you will see four offensive linemen go one way and another clearly go in the wrong direction and smash into their own guy. All right, we can sort of figure out who was at fault there. There are a lot of different things in that realm that we can glean from watching the play. But my bigger thing is, if there is a 50-50 ball between a receiver and a corner, and the receiver comes up with it, that's going to be a positive. If the corner comes up with it, it's going to be a corner or a positive for the corner. The offensive lineman, when they're going one-on-one against the defensive lineman, who wins that battle? Those are the things that I'm looking for when I go through these grades. So the bigger thing here is there are some really cool things that I can glean from watching the tape. And that's what I try to come across when I do these. So the numbers, you can take or leave them. Some of you will like them. Some of you won't care. I get it. But we're here more for the discussion of some of the plays that stood out and some of the things that stood out as I went through and watched every player on every single play. So my top five offensive performances, I will go through them in order and then we'll kind of discuss them. Caleb Jones with a plus 0.2, Luke Tenuta with a plus 0.2, Ellis Merriweather with a plus 0.2, Malik Heath with a plus 0.15, and Kadeem Telfert with a plus 0.15. The biggest thing you should know here is if your highest graded player on the day is a plus 0.2, you had in all likelihood, you had a very, very bad day at the office. That is a pretty low grade in general. That's pretty close to being like a neutral level grade, and that is the highest graded player in this game. To sort of make it even worse, Caleb Jones, Luke Tenuta, and Ellis Merriweather specifically weren't in until later in the game for the most part. Merriweather saw a little bit of time in the first half, but for the most part, he got the majority of his reps at the end of the game. And specifically, Jones and Tenuta beat up a little bit towards the end of the fourth quarter with about 10 minutes left. They finally got in the game, went against some players that had already been playing, and they were able to go in fresh and kind of pick off the, let's just say, maybe some of the lesser players on the Broncos at that point. So they didn't have to go against the Broncos starters or even the second teamers. It was pretty much third and fourth string by the time Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta came in. Now, you can only block the people that are in front of you. So kudos to Tenuta and Caleb Jones for getting the job done. But it was minimal snaps. It was against, you know, again, the backups of the backups of the Broncos defense. And it wasn't until late in the fourth quarter that we started to see them actually get those reps. So just noteworthy. Same thing with Merriweather. Most of that came a little bit later, not only in garbage time, but again, when you're not going against the stiffest of competition. Malik Heath, plus 0.15, had some good things that he did in this game. Thought he got open on a few different occasions. Thought his quarterbacks could have given him a few different balls that maybe would have made Malik have some explosive plays down the field. I thought there were two opportunities to hit Malik. There's one that maybe you could argue goes through his hands, that first big third down play where they take the shot down the left side of the field. I understand it, but if you look at it, he gets held pretty blatantly on that play. Probably should have been a hold or a pass interference on that play. I don't see it as a massive negative or even a negative for Malik Heath. I think he did what he should have. I think he stacked the corner. The corner grabbed him. Should have been a penalty. If the corner doesn't grab him, it's probably a completion. And it just is what it is. You kind of live with it. But I thought he did his job to get open on that play. And then Kadeem Telfert, we'll talk a little bit more about in just a moment. But I actually came away pretty impressed with him. It wasn't a perfect game by any means, but there was some really fun stuff that he did in the run game. I posted a video over on Twitter. There's this fun, it ends up being like a 2-yard toss to the right. The play is not noteworthy in any real way, but he's lined up at left tackle and he starts going up the field. And the only person he has to block is a safety. So you can just see him lock in on the safety and he gets up to the third level and he goes to the safety. And so much so, now if you don't know, Kadeem Telfort's like 6'7", 330, 340, I don't know. He's a massive, massive human being. And he's on that third level and then he gets to the safety and the safety literally starts to run away from him. And it doesn't matter. Telfert pushes him down, gets him to the ground. The safety gets back up. Telfert pushes him down again. It is a beautiful scene from the offensive tackle. But that's a fun play. It didn't really matter on the play because it's on the back end and the play is a toss to the right and it didn't go anywhere anyway per pretty much every single other play in the game for the offense. But that was a fun one from Kadeem Telfert. But I thought he did some good stuff in the run game. Yes, sort of him, Travis Glover, Caleb Jones, the foot speed isn't necessarily great. There's a reason that Green Bay prioritizes these super agile freak athletes along the offensive line because that foot quickness is so important against the modern NFL edge rusher. But other than that, you know, a couple plays where maybe a player got around Kadeem a little bit quick. You know, if you fight in a phone booth with Kadeem, you're not going to end very well. That's going to end with advantage for Kadeem Telfert. And I thought there was a plethora of positive plays for Kadeem in this one. Some things he would certainly like to clean up, but it was a better performance than I thought when I watched it the first time through. My bottom five offensive performances in this game, Tyler Davis, -0.8, Sean Clifford, -0.7, Royce Newman, -0.6, Jacob Monk, -0.5, and then Lasita Smith and Grant Dubose at -0.3. We'll start with Tyler Davis here. Tyler Davis had a really tough day blocking. There's one play, I think, early where he successfully executes a block, and then pretty much after that, it was just nightmare fest. There was plays where he was coming across the formation, just manned up one-on-one. You know, some plays where he was moved. It did not seem to matter. He could not get the job done when he was asked to block. The Denver Broncos starting lineup on defense was just overwhelming him, and it resulted in multiple negative plays for the Packers offense. Now, the interesting thing, and this is where, let's just have a real conversation here. Tyler Davis in practice so far, and I've talked to people like Paul Bredell about this, in practice, Tyler Davis has looked very good so far. Now, I understand if you want to go back to some preseasons past and be critical of the way that Tyler Davis played, and I feel like Tyler Davis has almost a Royce Newman-esque stigma about him of every time he's in, there's just bad plays after bad plays. I understand it, because in some of the games, it hasn't looked that way. But I've watched this guy in practice through all of training camp now, and he's looked really good in practice. And one of the crazy things is from a blocking standpoint, that's been what he's looked best at. He's looked great as a blocker. And then he comes into the game, and he makes me out to be a liar. I'm just kidding. But it looks like, you know, he really struggled in this one. And I can understand why people then go and watch the actual game itself and look at Davis and say, all right, he consistently makes these mistakes in games. You can't trust him. And I, to some extent, I get it. But this is kind of what we were talking about with AJ Dillon a little bit last week, where, again, Dillon previous years haven't exactly been the biggest proponent, but I've watched him in camp so far, and he's had a really good start to training camp. And then again, he goes in the first game and does nothing, partly in large part, actually, due to the blocking on the play. But I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, I've seen what he's doing in camp, but it didn't carry over into the game. And the same thing here for Tyler Davis. Now, for Tyler Davis, this was his first game back coming off the ACL injury from a season ago. You can understand maybe there was some nerves, maybe there's a little bit of rust. I do still think Tyler Davis is in a real position to potentially make this roster, but he needs to play much better in the third preseason game than he did in the second preseason game. Because at the end of the day, there are players, you know, through all walks of life, soccer, baseball, football, basketball, there are players that will not practice well, that will go out on game day and they will perform well. And there are players that will continuously and consistently practice well, and they will not go out and play well in the games. It just, there's this weird aspect of sometimes there are just gamers where the lights come on and everything clicks and it just slows down and that competitive juice really kicks in and they go and they perform at their best. And there are others that in practice, maybe the pressure isn't as much and they can go out and focus on their craft and do it well. But once the game lights come on and everyone's watching, then maybe some of it's nerves or anxiety or, you know, just whatever, right? But they don't perform the same. And right now, that was a little bit of what I saw from Tyler Davis. And I will say it one more time. I'm willing to say, hey, this is his first game back coming off of injury. Let's see what this looks like next week. But I do think next week will be a very important week for Tyler Davis. It's not like there's some massive upside for Tyler Davis, right? It's not like he was a former first-round pick. It's not like Green Bay has a ton of resources invested into him. It's not like if he gets out there and makes the team that he's all of a sudden going to be the key piece to this Packers offense this upcoming year. It is up to Tyler Davis to show that he can perform at a high level when given the opportunity, or at least a solid, consistent level, and he failed to reach that mark in this particular game. What is up, everybody? We are back with another exciting week of Prize Picks action, and if you have not started playing Prize Picks yet, what are you waiting for? You need to sign up right now and you will quickly realize why it's America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Now that Team USA has brought home the gold, WNBA basketball is ready to heat back up, and it's already been a huge weekend from Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And right now, you could turn $10 into $1,000 while watching the stars tear it up in the WNBA. And did you know that you can set your lineup in as little as 60 seconds? Just pick more or pick less on a player's stat projections and you are locked in. Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and of course, Wisconsin. This week, I'm going with Kelsey Plum and Arike Ngumbawale in what should be a massively fun week of basketball on Prize Picks. And the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. As many of you know, a few years back, the Milwaukee Bucks were in the NBA Finals, and I desperately wanted to go to Game 6 in Milwaukee to see them win the championship. As you can imagine, prices were insane, and I kept going back and forth with different apps to try and find the cheapest tickets possible. I finally found them, clicked purchase, and of course, they were gone. Goodbye, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Now, thankfully, the day of the game, I was able to find a ticket, but the entire thing was so expensive and way too stressful. I really wish I could have simply used Game Time to alleviate all of the stress and all of the hassle. I've started using Game Time app for purchasing all of my tickets, and I wish I would have done so sooner. From low prices to easy to find tickets to last minute ticket deals, the Game Time app is perfect for all of my ticket needs. Game Time is the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. You can get images of your seat before you buy, you can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two clicks only in fact, and tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never need to dig through your email. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. That's code PACKADAY. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Sean Clifford, as mentioned, was my second lowest. I don't think we need to dig into this that much. Obviously, a huge interception over the middle, a couple deep throws down the field that I thought he could have hit that he did not hit, a throw that was, a couple throws that were behind his receivers, and just the inability to make any sort of consistent plays with the offense, get the ball in the hands of his playmakers. It was just off rhythm. It was off kilter. It wasn't just on Sean. Just like Matt will say, it's not always on Jordan, good, bad, or ugly. It wasn't all on Sean on this one. Thought there were times his offensive line could have helped him more. Thought there were times his receivers certainly could have helped him more. But there were opportunities out there for Sean Clifford. And the big thing is he's got to find a way to hang on to the football. And that was a big interception at the end of the first half that took away Green Bay's potential to maybe put a two-minute drill together and go down and get some points. Royce Newman, negative 0.6. I think this is the end of the line for Royce. I really do. And I never am cheering on a player to get released or cut. I hope he lands on his feet. I hope he goes out and finds a contract somewhere and can go out and perform to the level of that contract. But Green Bay played Royce every single snap of this game. And there were plays against the starters where it was same old Royce. There were some plays very late in the game in the third and fourth quarter where I'm like, okay, this is solid. This is all right. But there were still plays in the third and fourth quarter that like there was the fourth and one run where it's Royce Newman against probably some third string, defensive tackle, and Royce can't get any movement whatsoever. And there's just too many big mistakes and too many guys that just get past him too easily. And it's not like this is anything new. We all know this. We've seen it now for years. And I'll say this, fourth round pick, I saw some things that I liked of him coming out of college. I thought in college, he did such a great job of getting out of his stance quick, hitting his landmarks, beating the defender to the spot. So he had the advantage by getting there first and be able to kind of plant himself and start, utilizing his hands to get under the pads of the defensive lineman. I thought there were things that carried over. And then his first year, he plays 1,000 snaps on a really, really freaking good offense. And was a starter the majority of that year. Was it great? No. Was it serviceable? Absolutely. Like if you would have told me that guy, like at worst was your, 8th, 9th, maybe even 10th offensive lineman, I'd be like, heck yeah. Like that guy just played 1,000 snaps. If he's your 8th, 9th guy, that means you're in really good shape. But now, I honestly believe, I don't think any offensive lineman had a worse day than Royce in this one. I would honestly, if you had to say right now, that you had to put an offensive line together, I would go right down the line. I would take Tenuta. I would take Lasita Smith. I would take, the only one I don't know if I would take over him or not is Donovan Jennings because we haven't seen him yet. But put Donovan Jennings aside, if you said there's a game tomorrow and you have to start, I think there's what, probably 10 offensive linemen. Maybe it's more than that. No, it's got to be more than that. Was it like 13, 14 offensive linemen on the roster? So what do we got? We got Rashid Walker, Elton Jenkins, Josh Myers, Jordan Morgan, Zach Tom, Kadeem Telford, Sean Ryan, Jacob Monk, Royce Newman, Andre Dillard, Caleb Jones, Lasita Smith, Travis Glover, Luke Tenuta, and we'll, that's 14. Donovan Jennings would be 15. We'll put Jennings to the side because we haven't seen him. If you had to ask me like who I want to play and rank them from 1 to 14, Royce Newman would be 14 on that list. I would trust anyone else that is on that roster right now more than I would trust Royce. And I, like I said, I hope he bounces back. I really liked, for the most part, what he did as a rookie, and it just hasn't developed since then. It's been taking consistent steps backwards, and you always hope, like, can you just figure it out? If Royce could just play the way that he did as a rookie, he's probably 7th, 8th offensive lineman on this team right now, at worst 9th, but it hasn't been the way. It's been that he is consistently taking steps backwards, and when you're not only taking steps forward, but you're taking legitimate steps backwards, that is a recipe for disaster. And I think we've reached the end of the line on the Royce Newman experience. I know it may seem like it'll never happen, but I think we're there. And I think the fact that he had to play this entire game just goes to show you Green Bay was giving him the opportunity to go out and prove himself. And I thought this was another performance that left a lot to be desired. Jacob Monk, -0.5. This is one where I just didn't see the same enthusiasm and tenacity that I saw from Monk in week one. You know, what did Butkus say? That it looked like Jacob Monk wanted to rip somebody's lips off. I didn't see that Jacob Monk in this game. It was a little bit more timid. I'm saying in comparison to last week, as is a physical offensive lineman. And, you know, there were certainly some things that he did well, but it wasn't, just didn't seem to have the same intensity. I didn't see the same physicality. I didn't see the same, you know, blocking through people. I didn't see him get anyone to the ground. And even some of the, just, you know, getting out of his stance, there were some really good stuff in week one. I just didn't see it carry over to week two. And that is the life of a rookie in the NFL sometimes. The hardest part is not doing it. It's doing it this week and next week and the following week and the following week, when you're facing all different players from all different teams of all different shapes and sizes, can you just get the job done no matter what? Week one, Jacob Monk, very good. Week two, thought we saw a little bit of a step back, certainly in that consistency, and just not the same type of performance that we saw against the Browns. And then Lasita Smith, Grant Dubose. Lasita Smith had a penalty late in the game that set him back and had one block that he got blown up really easily. I think actually there may have been two blocks that way, but either way, a couple things that he did well, but certainly some things he's going to have to learn from. And then Grant Dubose just really struggled to separate at any point in this game. I didn't count like the play that was behind him against him at all, but he just really struggled to get open. I thought Malik Heath did a better job in this game. There was one really nice block from Grant Dubose in this one. I think it actually might've been on the 15-yard run by Emmanuel Wilson, but he continues to show up in that way. But I thought this was a big opportunity for all these wide receivers, and specifically Dubose. But it was hard, right? Like, the quarterbacks did them no favors. The offense as a whole did them no favors. But it definitely was a bit of a struggle for Dubose to separate in this one. All right, my top five defensive performances. Brenton Cox, +0.5. Christian Welch, +0.4. Robert Rochelle, +0.3. Corey Ballantyne, +0.25. And Eric Wilson, +0.25. Eric Wilson just had a solid day, a couple good tackles, nothing really to write home about. Corey Ballantyne, kind of same thing. A handful of really good plays in coverage, didn't really give up anything. I think he may have made a tackle or two, but either way, just a solid day from him. I'll talk about the top three. Robert Rochelle, I thought, really looked natural in coverage and then really did a great job of coming up and making tackles in the run game. He continues to look the part. He's a really great special teams player. I do think that he is very much in the conversation for one of those corner jobs. Christian Welch continues to have a fantastic training camp and preseason. He made two really impressive plays in run defense. One where he screamed across the entire length of the field to go make a play. Another where he took on a blocker, shed the blocker, and made the play in the backfield. And then, of course, he had the interception as well. Really impressive and solid day from Christian Welch. And then Brenton Cox, big sack, a couple different pressures, including, I can't remember if it's him or Mosby on the one that was the interception. But either way, he had a great day. And I thought after a week one in preseason, I thought he bounced back in a very significant way. And if you look at this list, Brenton Cox, Christian Welch, Robert Rochelle, Corey Ballantyne, the top four. Those are guys that are in that, what, like 48 to 55 range on the roster, right in the middle of that roster bubble. I think this is, again, why I love doing this the day after, regardless of the outcome, is because these are guys that are fighting for their roster lives. And in a game that went mostly to crap, Brenton Cox, Christian Welch, Robert Rochelle, and Corey Ballantyne really did a nice job of helping to solidify their status and, so you know, give them an opportunity to make this 53. They are right there, and this was a good performance for all four of them to try to show even more that they deserve to be on this opening roster. I'll do my bottom four defensive performances. There were four, and then there was like eight guys tied for that last spot, so we'll just go to the bottom four. Spencer Wagge, -0.6. LVN, -0.5. LJ Davis, -0.45. And Raylan Goforth, -0.4. Spencer Wagge, there were a couple solid plays, but he's just really struggling to hold up at the point of attack in the run game. Just a little bit undersized, doesn't quite have that, the weight in his pants to kind of just sit down and anchor against some double teams. It's a work in progress. There's definitely something there. He actually, in an odd way, got in the game before Jonathan Ford did, which was a little bit interesting. It wasn't by much, but that was somewhat unique. It just was a tough day at the office, and he just has to probably, you're going to love this, put on some functional strength probably in the next offseason and hopefully come back next year for some team and make another run at this thing. LVN, this is probably one of the more disappointing performances. He went up against Garrett Bowles a lot, the right tackle for Denver, and just got stymied for the vast majority of the day. He had one pressure that was off of an unblocked look, where, again, he just did not get blocked on the play. So you should get a pressure on that play. Outside of that, it was just him basically running into a brick wall over and over again. You know, couldn't really get off of blocks, couldn't make anything dynamic happen. You wanted to see a little bit more. I thought we saw some pretty solid stuff from LVN in week one, but we also saw some stuff that he needed to continue to improve upon. You can understand why Green Bay wanted to play him in this game. He is still incredibly raw. He needs to work on his pass rush plan. And right now, it just... Listen, I love the fact that he's a freak athlete, and I love the fact that he has a nonstop motor, but this is a game where you have to be technical about your position. You have to work on the individual skills, and you have to continue to, you know, hone your craft. And right now, he has a long ways to go to becoming a well-rounded defensive end. And I would hope that, you know, he continues to set a hard edge in the run game and that he can make an impact that way while he continues to put this pass rush repertoire together, because some of these other guys, Enigbare and Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, right now they just have a little bit better of a pass rush plan. And I would like to see those guys in on the more obvious pass downs. And it might take LVN being in on more early downs to set the edge and eat some of those snaps so the rest of the guys are fresh when it comes time to actually rush the passer. LJ Davis, again, I don't mean to be sounding like a jerk here, but he just does not look like an NFL corner. He looks more like a CFL, UFL type of guy. Sometimes it takes a journey. Sometimes guys just aren't ready yet, and you need a little bit more experience wherever you can get it. And maybe he comes back in a couple years and shows what he's capable of. But right now, just does not look like a NFL corner that can play in any sort of regular season action. And then Raylan Goforth got trucked at the goal line by Jarrett Stidham. That's never a good look. Had a couple plays, did get knocked out on that play as well. Had the penalty, which I did not downgrade him for. Did not think that he led with the head. It looked like it was shoulder. Didn't think there was anything he really did wrong on that play. And he did definitely hustle to the ball. There's some times, though, he's just an undersized dude. He's quick, but he's undersized, and he just gets blocked off the screen on some play. So a little bit of a tough day for Raylan Goforth. Just in case you're wondering, here are PFF's top graded players and worst graded players from this game. Their top five offensive players, Luke Tenuta, Malik Heath, Samori Toure, Caleb Jones, and Travis Glover. So we talked about Tenuta, Heath, Caleb Jones, and we'll talk a little bit more about Travis Glover in just a moment. PFF's bottom five players, they also had Tyler Davis as their lowest, Sean Clifford as their second lowest, Grant Dubose was their third. He was, what, fifth on mine? They had Nate McCrary as their fourth, and then Joel Wilson as their fifth. Their top five defensive players, Benny Sapp III, who did come in and make a couple nice tackles from safety late in the game. Remember, theirs is more of like, if you only had five plays, and I don't know what Sapp had exactly, but if you only had five plays and you played them well, you're going to grade really well. Whereas for me, you need to play more to get more positive plays because it's more a points based. It's not an average based. So there's difference in grading scale here, but Benny Sapp the third was an 85.8. Then Chris Russell, the junior, was 80.3. I really liked Chris Russell Jr. He came in, I think made three tackles in like the five or six snaps that he was in. So he actually looked pretty good. But again, very minimal snap count. Christian Welch, we talked about him, of course, was third. Colby Wooden was fourth, and they had Jonathan Ford as fifth. Their bottom five, LJ Davis was their lowest, followed by Raylan Goforth, followed by Zach Morton, Kalen King, and Christian Young. All right, some players who helped themselves in this game. We talked about a lot of these. Brenton Cox, we talked about. Christian Welch, Robert Rochelle, Corey Ballantyne. I thought all four of those on the defensive side of the ball helped themselves. And then Travis Glover and Kadeem Telfort. I'm going to save this for just one moment because I want to talk about the offensive tackles, but I thought both of those guys helped each other in this game to really make a case, help make a case for them making the roster. Players who hurt themselves, Sean Clifford, tough day. He could still end up just being the number two, but I don't think you feel great about it at the moment. Tyler Davis, we talked about. Royce Newman, we talked about. And Grant Dubose just, again, struggled to get off of coverage and just struggled separating through the vast majority of the day. So those are the players who hurt themselves. Upon further review, one of my bigger takeaways, or at least better takeaways, was that I thought the offensive tackles performed a lot better than I saw them at first glance. I had my final grades: Andre Dillard, -0.1, Caleb Jones, +0.2, Kadeem Telfort, +0.15, and Travis Glover, +0.1. So they actually collectively, +0.35 in the positive. And I would not have guessed that at first glance. I thought there were a couple of times the quarterbacks got to a little bit too deep of a depth. And there were a lot of times too where there was maybe a little bit of initial pressure, but the offensive tackle would sit down and anchor and not allow them to get to the quarterback and still allow the quarterback to get the play off and not have somebody trying to drag them down from behind or hit them from the side. I thought they actually settled into the game pretty darn well. And Travis, this is where I want to talk about Travis Glover. If there was a, you know, sort of under the radar positive in this game, to me, it was Travis Glover. And it's funny because I think somebody in the pregame chat asked me, what does Travis Glover need to do to make this team? I said, the biggest thing for him is he's not trying to necessarily be one of the top, you know, 53 guys right now. He just needs to show his upside and not make mistakes. And he got early opportunities in this game. He came in, I want to say late first, early second, played a huge chunk of snaps, held it together really well, and showed that upside in this game. There were a couple of really impressive blocks. There was one where he, you know, he's coming from the backside and he gets around the defensive end, and you know, for his size and his movement, like, it was pretty impressive. And then not only gets there, but turns him and seals him. Like, there was some pretty big time stuff from Travis Glover at times. He's one of those guys that once you, again, get in a phone booth, good luck, because he is strong and physical. He looks the part. The footwork is, again, going to be a little bit of a work in progress. He's going to need to continue to work on that. But I thought if he, you know, even had a solid to decent game in this one, that would be a good step for him. I thought he actually performed pretty darn well. A couple plays, of course, that he would like to have back. But I thought this was a really nice, kind of out of nowhere performance. And like I said, he got in early, performed at a high enough level, and I think showed that he has a real opportunity and a real chance to make this 53-man roster. And maybe not even so much now as just like, hey, he was a draft pick and he didn't show that he's a complete bust, so he's going to make it. But I actually think that what he showed, he might end up being one of the best 53 guys on this roster right now, which of course helps you actually make the top 53 on the roster. So those were my key takeaways from this one. Like I said, it's always fun going back and looking at the film. There are some things that will catch your eye that you didn't see when you first watch it. And I really like some of those defensive performances, specifically Brenton Cox, Christian Welch, Robert Rochelle, and Corey Ballantyne. And then the offensive tackles. At first glance, thought it was a struggle. Watching it again, definitely a little bit more of a struggle early, but I thought they really settled into the game, partly due to some of the Broncos backups coming in. But I thought, again, Travis Glover and Kadeem Telfort really helped themselves in this performance. So some positives. It didn't seem like it in real time, but there were some positives. Oh, just really quick. I didn't have this on my list, but I meant to put it on there. Tyron Hopper. Tyron Hopper was a +0.1 in this game. He was obviously our Luigi's Pizza, player of the day, I should say, Luigi's Pizza player of the day yesterday. I thought there was some really good stuff. I really liked sort of the proof of concept a little bit with Tyron Hopper. I thought he was all over the place, thought he made some really good tackles, had a little bit of pop behind it. Good stuff. Some things in coverage he needs to work on, just understanding when to sort of sit down, when to trigger, those sort of things. But overall, I thought this was a good, first game and a first start for Tyron Hopper. He's going to have to grow and continue to get better. But again, I thought overall this was a net positive, and of course led the team in tackles, was all over the place. Again, some things he can do better in coverage, but good first performance, liked what I saw, and hopefully now we can use that as a base and kind of grow from there. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Bradad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinosa, Peter Itaka, Caleb Cookster, SoCal Pack, Dan Gesford, and Love and Football. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews, check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.